Celia Svedhem.
Okay, so everyone's having a headache sometimes.
Pain is some serious business. It ain't everyone who knows what to do about it. Now I hear there's a podcast just about this. It doesn't talk of pain alone, but other interesting things distracting the mind from it. So I suggest you tune in to Outsmart the Pain and listen to what Karsten has to say about it. Get ahead. Get it done. Listen to the podcast and maybe change your life or someone else's.
Welcome to this new episode of Outsmart the Pain. Today I have a very interesting guest, Celia Svedhem, who is a psychologist and a writer, and we will be talking about the very interesting subject of migraine, this terrible condition that affects so many of us, but in a slight different perspective, maybe. We'll see. So first of all, warmly, warmly welcome, Celia. So nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
I need to ask you a very intriguing questions first. You are a writer, and I heard something about poison and children. You need to tell me, what have you been writing about poison and children?
No, it's a book about how to avoid poison in nature, vegetables not to eat, what to avoid.
So it was a book for children, how to avoid poisons.
Yeah, exactly.
In
yeah.
mushrooms and food, or
yeah, and flowers. What can they pick, and what should they stay away from? How to stay away from drowning, and how not to start a fire, and stuff like
okay,
that.
So dangerous situations to avoid for a child.
Yes, that wow. That book is actually coming out in English, Poisonous and Dangerous. So it's about how to avoid poisonous and dangerous situation in nature. Yeah.
And for what age is this book for children?
6 to 9.
6 to 9 years. Oh, so everyone out there who wants to avoid poison and dangerous situations within reach of your children, there is a book coming out. The title of it?
It's Poisonous and Dangerous. Or is it Dangerous and Poisonous? Yeah.
Okay, Poisonous and Dangerous, or the other way around. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, for you who have listened to this pod before, you know that I usually don't do a lot of background research about the people I interview. And I don't look up everything they have been doing, because I want to be almost like the listener themselves. So I ask the silly questions because I don't know anything. And the same goes with you, Celia, of course. I know a little bit, because otherwise I wouldn't invite you, because you are a very interesting person. But tell us, who are you?
You said I'm a psychologist. I've been working with, is it habilitation in English?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also like primary care, health center, working with patients with anxiety and light depression, not psychiatry like before.
Mm-hmm.
But for the last couple of years, I have also been writing half time. I'm writing for magazines and stuff mostly about psychology and literature. And I have also written 2 children's books. And now I have written this book about migraine. If I'm translating it like word by word, it's The Dark Room and the History of Migraine and the Search for Relief.
So is it like a historical story?
It's like every other chapter is about my personal migraine. when the book starts, it's really bad. It's every day. Every other chapter, it's about the history of the disease itself. And it's also about historical persons who have been suffering from migraine. I've written about Virginia Woolf, Friedrich Nietzsche, Charles Darwin, Lewis Carroll. And there's a lot of interesting people that have been having really bad migraines. And I've been writing about their lives and also how the migraines have affected their work.
Not to offend any people out there, but for people who don't take the Bible literally, I have also heard that, I think it was Paulus or Saulus, Saul or Paul, that when he saw the burning bush, that should actually be a migraine attack. I have no idea if that's true, but maybe
oh,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a symbol or...
Yeah, or that he actually had the aura and described it as, I don't know if it was a burning bush or a person or something like that, but... So maybe we have had descriptions of migraine very far back. How come you got the interest of psychology and literature? How did you make that connection? Because you said you have been writing about this before. How did you find this area that you write about?
I guess that's... who I am. I've always been reading since I was a kid. When my parents said, oh, you have to go out and get some fresh air, I always sneaked a book with me out and was like hiding. They thought I was moving around and getting some exercise, but I was sitting somewhere reading. Then I started studying to become a psychologist. If you have a character in television or in literature, you can always discuss his or her psychology without anyone getting offended. If you want to discuss a diagnosis or something, you can take someone, a fictive person from literature, and everyone knows who it is.
I can see the connection that you've done here. Very interesting. You said the book starts with you being very bad, so I guess you suffer from migraine as well.
Yeah, exactly. Why I started to write this book was actually because I was having so much migraine. All my time that I had to spare was in this dark, quiet room. Spent so much time in that room that I felt like I was disappearing as a person. Like I'm not a part of the world anymore. So I was starting to write during my attacks as a way of trying to stay in the world and try to stay connected to myself. And also to try to describe what I was going through, because I felt like I couldn't really describe what was happening to me, to my relatives and to my friends. When I said that I'm having a headache, they were like, okay, so... everyone's having a headache sometimes. They didn't get the seriousness of my headache and how sick I was and why my life was disappearing. So often after my attacks, when I had started to write, I had something to share with my husband that I've written this, and I had a metaphor that I could give him, and he could start to grasp what I was going through. So I think that was like the start of the book a couple of years ago when I was trying to write something about the pain, because I really felt that I was missing words and metaphors and way to describe how much pain. It was pain, physical pain, but it was also very much pain from, you know, missing out on life. And I heard the life, my life, or my kids and my husband outside the door and outside of that dark room. It was still going on that other side of the door, but I wasn't a part of it anymore because I was just lying there in the room with all that pain. So it was pain in different ways, but...
And one of the things that a lot of people with persistent pain, regardless if it's migraine or another pain, is exactly what you're describing, that it's very hard to make other people understand how bad it is. And it's not only the pain itself, but the secondary things that happened, that you can't be a part of life, maybe can't sleep, can't exercise, whatever. I wrote a book about persistent pain, and one of my takes was actually that it shouldn't be a book about one single pain case, because not everyone can identify with it, because they say, oh, that guy or woman, of course they are suffering, but I don't have exactly that type of pain. So it's kind of a general book about pain with a lot of patient examples, and co-author Karin Hjulström, her thoughts and feelings about her pain is the same around the world, I think. And that is so nice with your book, because so many people suffer from migraine. I mean, it's a very, very common type of headache, and a lot of people suffer. And when they have chronic migraine, it must be awful. I don't have it, but what you describe with parallel life with your family, that must be devastating.
Yeah, it was.
Me being a physician, now I say what we talk about being physicians. Of course, we talk medicine, and we talk tablets, and we talk about botulinum toxin and all these things. And you're a psychologist. And tell me your view about pharmacy in all this. Is there a place for it, or do you think that we overuse it? If you have any thoughts about it, I don't know. But why not talk about the elephant in the room, the doctor talking to the psychologist from different perspectives?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about it. I think it's a very important part in migraine. In the beginning of the book, I eat tablets, both those you take before you get the attack that you take every day. I don't know what you call those in English, but, and also the acute medicine. I was eating triptans every day. Mm-hmm. I was calling the doctor and I was saying, is it really okay for me to eat this much medication? I have a migraine every day and I take this medication every day. And they was like, you know, we have given you everything we have. You have this medication that you take beforehand, and you have this medication that you take when you get a migraine. So we can't really make anything more for you.
The acute medicine, the triptans that you're taking, you took them every day.
Yes,
The acute medication almost became a regular one then.
Yeah, I guess so. And I've informed them about this. And they really treated me like I was nagging them, and that I was a pain in the ass.
You had a pain and you were a pain. Hmm?
Eventually, I got them to send me to the neurologist team on the hospital. It was a waiting list for 6 months. I was so desperate, so I got to a private clinic where I could pay for myself. And they were like, okay, so you've been eating this much medication, so you have a headache. Probably you have a headache from eating this much medication. We have to detoxify you. I was shocked that they knew so little about this at the first healthcare that I went. That I've been informing them about how much medication I was eating. And they was like, okay. But then I had to do this detox, and it was absolutely awful. But after that, it wasn't that I had migraine all day long, every day. So the medication itself had given me more migraines. It's shocking that they have so little information about the medication that they prescribe.
now everyone is asking, okay, so it didn't help with medication, but what did you do instead? Very short.
This was at the time that new medications was arriving.
The injections, for instance.
These antibodies,
yes.
Yeah. So after a while, I got to try those and they had some effect on me. I have heard that 25% gets really good effect and 50% of us get a moderate effect. If my migraine attacks had been like 9 or 10 in a pain scale of 10, they sunk to 6. And 25% don't get any effect of these. They were coming as often, several times a week, but they weren't as bad. They were like 5, 6, 7 instead of 9, 10. I stopped puking and stuff. It got better. So I think it's really important with medication, but it's also really important that it's a doctor that knows the medication and
knowledge about what you're doing and not just administering pills from left to right.
Yeah, exactly.
So medication could be an important role, but of course everything else that you've talked about, you know, getting your life back and how to deal with it, you can't really treat that with medication. So you need the other part where, for instance, psychology has a very important role, I guess.
Yes. Actually, in psychology, I would say it's at least 2 big branches of how you see this in ACT and in CBT.
And ACT is active commitment therapy, and CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. They are talking about how to adapt your life to living, adapt your life to the pain and not let the pain be an obstacle in your life, to live your life with your pain and do things that is important to you with your pain and not let the pain stop you. And in psychodynamic therapy, they are more talking about that therapy can actually cure the pain. I have my education and my degree in cognitive behavioral therapy. So I've been working with myself from that perspective. I was provoked with this psychodynamic, you can cure the pain. And it comes from the thought of having aggression, that you don't have contact with your feelings, that you push them away and that you are somatizing your feelings instead of experiencing them, if you put it shortly. Does it make any sense? Or,
of course it does. This might be a political question, but I'm just curious. These 2 branches, psychodynamic, where you go back in life, I guess, and can cure the pain or cure another disease, what do I know? And then the CBT or ACT. These are 2 branches within psychology. Are they seeing each other as helping each other for different aspects of life? Or is it like the war between those 2, who is right and who is wrong? Because I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know how you, and of course this might be your personal view, but I'm just interested. Is it?
I think during my education, I experienced like it was a war. But during these years, like 10 years that I've been working, I haven't really catched up so much on the psychodynamic theories and stuff. I've been working with my stuff, with the CBT. But when I was writing this book, I read that Sigmund Freud, he had the migraine himself. And he was trying to cure it with cocaine at first. Actually so much that he was snorting it so that his nose melted between the nostrils.
Yeah, the cartilage.
He had to do operation to get it back. So he had really bad migraines, and that was why he got into neurology at first, but then also why he got into psychology and psychoanalyst because he wanted to understand why he got these migraines. He got this idea about it being sexual frustration. But then he kind of abandoned that idea. It could be any kind of psychological frustration. Then he expanded his big theory of psychology that had influenced very, very much of the psychology, the psychodynamics. But it all started with his migraines, actually. The psychodynamic psychologists today had developed his ideas very much, and they have done some thorough research. And actually, there is a psychotherapy that is focused on that it doesn't have any physiological damage underneath, like migraines or IBS. When I read about this, I had to write about this in the book. So I interviewed the guy who was developing this kind of psychotherapy. And he really impressed me because he was talking about his patients with such a curiosity and respect. There was no lack of patience about his patients, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, so he treated them respectfully and was actually interested in their problems. Yeah. Yes.
I've been trying so much to get the relief in my migraines. I haven't mentioned now all the things that I have tried describe in my book. It's not just the medication. It's a lot of things that how to change things in your life and how to live differently and stuff. So I was like, let's try this kind of psychotherapy as well. So I did, and that's something I describe in the book as well. It worked. It didn't work on its own, but it was part of what made me better in my migraines. I was actually really skeptic, hardcore CBT in the beginning of the book. Now I'm really curious, and I really want to learn more, maybe start working with this other psychotherapy method myself in the future. I think it's have a place in healthcare, both of the methods.
So the more knowledge we have, the better. Of course.
For different problems and for different patients, we should really respect the different kind of treatment and different kind of knowledge.
So if someone with a difficult migraine is listening and wondering, is there anything else I could do? I am also one of these people who take medication every day and it doesn't really seem to help. Do you have any suggestions for them, what they should do?
Yeah, I guess they firstly should have like a good neurologist that helps them to get off these medications they take every day. Like, you shouldn't take a medication every day. I think the book is kind of good in that way, because I'm going over how you have to look at one thing at a time.
You have to see which components in your life that you need to improve.
And you have to look at patterns. But it's really hard to look at patterns when you have migraines every day. I'm so inhibited by talking in English.
I think you're doing great. but to cut it short, actually, if you're interested in your thoughts about this and how to make things better, why don't fetch a copy of the Swedish book, Det mörka rummet. And if you are a little bit patient, hopefully it will actually sell internationally. Because you are looking in that direction, I understand. So you will be able to read about what to do. And I usually say when it comes to my book, I say read it. And my co-author Karin says read it several times. And that is actually the thing, that everything doesn't stick the first time. And sometimes you read something and say, oh, did I actually read this before? Because this is new. I think maybe they should get your book and read it again, right?
Yeah, but I also think that it's a good book for the relatives, for someone with the migraine to read, because I've heard that very many people with chronic migraines, they feel so isolated and alone in the pain. And like I did, they don't know how to express what they are going through. When a relative read the books, they get some idea of what it's like. And then a conversation have started, and bringing the person out from its isolation, it had been possible to talk about the migraines, because I believe that a lot of people do, and then it's actually even harder to start to talk about it if someone else initiate a conversation about migraine in a real way, in a curious way. It's easier to share what you're going through.
One part of the book is your journey and your suggestions and for relatives. And the other part is about the historical persons suffering from migraine. And you just talked about Sigmund Freud. Do you have any other example that would be interesting for us to hear about some other person that we know about who you're mentioning in the book?
Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, he had migraine, and the theory is that Alice in Wonderland actually is steaming from a migraine attack. And
wow, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of the weirdness is coming from his auras. Alice is eating something, a cookie, and she gets bigger, and she's drinking something and shrinking. A lot of people with migraine auras has these symptoms of having body parts feeling like they are big or shrinking, or feeling like a hand is a long way away. Also, Alice, she normally knows something, but now she can't remember it, and she can't put the words right. That is also really common before the pain comes, and that you're really slow in your brain.
Wow, so that's Alice in Wonderland. Follow the yellow brick road. Anyone else for us?
Yeah, Virginia Woolf, she had it as well, but she didn't get the diagnosis when she lived. But if you read her diary, you can actually diagnose her from what she's writing about her headaches. She never got any painkillers for the headaches. Her doctors got her another diagnosis instead. That was neurostenia, a diagnosis that at the time doctors gave it to a lot of women that had anxiety or pain. And it was said, if you have exhausted yourself, like physical or mentally, and she had to be resting for 6 or 8 weeks, just laying in bed. During this time, she had awful headaches.
I think I could have a separate episode about the way we have been looking at women and diseases through the years. That the word hysteria, coming from, you know, the female organ, actually, when we talk hysterectomies, that's the same base word as hysteria. And that says something about how we have been looking at it, which is totally awful. And in Swedish, we have an old word, SVBK, Sveda, Värk, Bränn, Kärring, because they were difficult.
Yeah, but that is also what I
don't understand. Yeah.
Yeah, that is what I'm talking about with this. When you get to the healthcare and you get to feel like you're the pain in the ass. I mean, that is still the culture of that is still around, even though it's not as bad anymore. It's still there.
It's still there.
So when you actually meet someone that is curious and taking you seriously, it's really worth something.
Yeah, it's worth a lot when you get someone who actually wants to dig a little bit deeper on a serious level.
Yeah. And also it's really important, because a lot of pain patients actually have a background of being misunderstood and not taken serious. So when you come with that background to the healthcare and get that once again, it's built for mistrust again. It's easy to come into a bad circle and not getting help. So it's bitterness from both sides.
Yeah. I don't have migraine myself more than eye migraine, where I lose sight for a short time, but then it disappears. Not the sight, but the symptoms. So I don't have these problems, but still I will definitely get your book and read it, because it's very interesting both to read about your journey, but all these historical facts that I haven't heard about before. It's been really a pleasure to hear you talk about this. Do you feel that there's anything that we've missed that you really need to say, or that I totally, completely missed the point of all this?
I have a chapter that is actually kind of sad, but also kind of fun, about the medical history, about all the crazy stuff that people have done to try to cure the migraines. I don't know if that is worth mentioning.
Oh, there must be crazy methods.
Yeah. Right? The first method that we tried to do was drill a hole in the head.
Oh, that's kind of not very effective, I guess.
But another method that is kind of weird is that in USA, for like 100 years ago, there was a belief that if the hair from your head were used somewhere, that could be the reason for migraines. So if you comb your hair, you had to collect the hair and burn it. So like,
oh, so it was contagious. You could get it from someone else's hair.
No, if a bird's got hold of your hair and build it into their nests, then you got migraines until their nest was empty.
Wonder how they came up with that one.
Yeah. And there is a lot of those stories.
Wow. Interested about historical things, how badly we tried to cure migraine, your personal story. If you're interested in dangerous and poisonous things to avoid for children, how to do that, and actually a book in Swedish for the same age group, children 6 to 9 years, about octopuses.
Yeah.
Here you have the author, Celia. It's been so interesting. I could do a double take on this and make another episode, because this has been so very interesting. But thank you so much for wanting to be a part of this Outsmart
the Pain.
Thank
you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and maybe we'll talk in the future, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Take care. And I hope that your book will do very, very well in the future.
Oh, thank you.